This is Michael Ann Conley, and you're listening to Habits and Health. You know, if you haven't yet succeeded in dealing with your problem habit or habits, it really just means that you haven't found your best path for change. In this podcast, you'll get a chance to deal with this through experiential approaches to shape your changes, which is a little different than the way that most habit change programs approach this process. We're interested in helping you expand your choices in changing behaviors, those behaviors that create problems for yourself or others. And the focus is on letting your body lead so your mind doesn't have to run the show all the time. A lot of people are familiar with the concept of HALT, and this is a reminder to use the signals of hunger, anger, loneliness, and tiredness to support you on your path to change. In the process of growing your next steps, patterns from the past, well, they're gonna reassert themselves. And recognizing the signs can help you manage the dynamics of relapse, however you define it. Today, we'll talk about the L in HALT. Letting yourself get too lonely is tricky, because loneliness includes more than social isolation. It's a little bit more complex than that. Before we go there, let's take a moment to support you in accessing yourself in a sensory way. In Habits into Health, we usually take just a minute or two for an experiential exercise. Sometimes we take longer than that. And it's important because your physical experience of yourself is actually your best source for recognizing your own truth about what's going on with you. And this includes your ability to sense the signals that old habits could be sneaking their way back in. For today, I invite you to take on the shape of withdrawal in whatever way you define this. Notice, as best as you can, where you experience withdrawing right now in this moment. I often use the term geography in the sense of locating where your experience is heightened. We could say that you're letting your body lead by being attentive to your physical signals without any need to label or judge what you notice. Don't concern yourself with the where in one place relative to the where in another, because you may find your experience to be in more than one heightened location. But you don't have to compare this either, meaning this particular exercise isn't about tracking where you engage in withdrawal today compared to your past experiences, or compared to where you think you should experience this in the future. If you can, just notice where in you the attitude of withdrawal shows up. I'm going to offer some examples, and they're not intended to imply any standard or a should, but only to give you a sample of where other people often report experiencing these sensations. And so you can bring your attention there to just check it out. So where you engage withdrawal could involve, say, your neck or your head. And you might even tune into what part of your head, in the back or the front, sides, or top. And perhaps you may engage withdrawal even down your back, into your hips or your legs. Or you may notice the shape of withdrawal in your belly, just for example. Next, let your body lead the way by noting what you're doing. To use our examples, in your neck or head, or even down the back, what are you doing that tells you, this is me withdrawing? Perhaps you're beginning to turn away. Or perhaps you're curling down, from your head down. In your belly or legs, check in and notice if withdrawing involves the preparation to walk, for instance, as in to walk away or to turn. Do you notice curling in or contracting somewhere? You could also notice your response to where you engage the shape of withdrawing and what you're doing in the area of yourself that this is occurring. So one person, for example, might experience herself withdrawing from the invitation to engage in the exercise. Oh, I don't want to do that. Well, then if that's the case for you, notice how you respond. What is that in you? Someone else might notice an activated feeling around his eyes or a stilling in the chest. So just notice. And as you do this, do you recognize any other adjustments or responses in other aspects of yourself? Let's call that thoughts or images, other sensations, memories, maybe even feeling cool or warm, or tense or loose. Sometimes, in my experience, the process of just slowing down to be attentive changes the experience that you're in and that you were in just moments ago. Doing this, just experiencing your own sensations, is a different way of self-knowing. It might not help you ace that final exam or speak up with your truth about the argument you had with your spouse 2 days ago. But one factor of this work, unlike many aspects of daily life, is the invitation to shift from trying to fix something that happened yesterday or make something happen tomorrow to being present with what is happening now, not the past nor the future. And if this approach to self-knowing engages you, interests you, please visit habitsintohealth.com to find out more. You can click on the podcast menu to listen to more Habits Into Health programs. You can find articles about habit change, addiction recovery, and personal growth. And you'll find links to follow us on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter, and to subscribe to our latest updates. My name is Michael Ann Conley, and I host the show. Today, we're continuing to dip into HALT, which is a reminder to be attentive to whether you are hungry, angry, lonely, or tired. These states can signal that we could be slipping back into the very habits that we're trying to soften or to end. In this episode, we're focusing on a different way to view introversion and extroversion around the lonely in HALT. Because lonely is a state we can fall into whether we're around a lot of other people or not. The conventional wisdom about introversion and extroversion says that if you're an extrovert, you're outgoing and you like to socialize. And if you're an introvert, you're shy and retiring and you like to be alone. It may look like that on the surface, but it's not quite so simple. Susan Cain is the author of a new book called Quiet, The Power of Introverts in a World That Can't Stop Talking. And she rightly places these styles from introversion to extroversion on a continuum. She writes, quote, "Our place on this continuum influences our choice of friends and mates and how we make conversation, resolve differences, and show love. It affects the careers we choose and whether or not we succeed at them. It governs how likely we are to exercise, commit adultery, function well without sleep, learn from our mistakes, place big bets in the stock market, delay gratification, be a good leader, and ask, what if?" End quote. These are examples of what Stanley Kellerman would call the post-personal, which is the social realm of our human experience. Kellerman is a pioneer explorer of the life of the body. And he calls another area of our experience pre-personal, which is genetic. So we have the post-personal, which is social, and the pre-personal, which is genetic. We're born with it. It exists in each of us as a part of inheritance before we've even been influenced by the social world. Payne doesn't use these terms, but she acknowledges that the range from extroversion to introversion is not just the result of upbringing. It's reflected, she writes, quote, in our brain pathways, neurotransmitters, and remote corners of our nervous system. Kane describes, however, how much the social world intrudes. So that, for instance, in the United States, the power of personality has valued only one side of the continuum, the extrovert. Quote, we're told that to be great is to be bold, to be happy is to be sociable. We see ourselves as a nation of extroverts, which means that we lost sight of who we really are, end quote. And you know, the U.S. has not just exported its business style to the rest of the world. It's also exported this valuing of extroversion as being the standard by which we define normal and happy. But even in the U.S., Kane reports, from one-third to half of American residents are introverted. And since the U.S. is, quote, among the most extroverted of nations, end quote, the number of introverts in the rest of the world, well, it's got to be at least as high. She writes that many people are closet introverts. And that means they're pretending to be extroverts because of what she calls the extrovert ideal. Quote, the omnipresent belief that the ideal self is gregarious, alpha, and comfortable in the spotlight. The archetypal extrovert prefers action to contemplation, risk-taking to heed-taking, certainty to doubt. He favors quick decisions, even at the risk of being wrong. She works well in teams and socializes in groups. Introversion, she says, along with its cousins' sensitivity, seriousness, and shyness, is now a second-class personality trait, somewhere between a disappointment and a pathology. And she also describes that many introverts are so practiced in pretending they don't even recognize their own nature. Is this something that might be familiar to you? Well, how do you know if you're an introvert or an extrovert? And what might this mean in terms of looking at the lonely in halt? At its very simplest, you can begin to be attentive to one aspect of yourself. When you feel energetically drained, are you replenished by being alone or by being in the company of others? Introverts are just as capable of being sociable when they're around other people. Not all introverts are shy, for instance. But they recharge energetically by being alone because they need quiet time to gather themselves. Extroverts, on the other hand, in terms of personality, they're replenished by being in the presence of others. So one example I give is take two people, one's an introvert, one's an extrovert, and they both have a long, hard day at work. The introvert comes home and wants to stay home. The extrovert comes home, changes clothes, and goes out to be with others. They both recharge, but in different ways, neither any better than the other. This difference suggests to me that we need to be more astute in recognizing that social isolation is not necessarily the same as loneliness. No matter what replenishes your energy, if you remain lonely in the crowd, if you can't stand to be alone, and you're driven to go out to be with people, but you feel alone, you might be an extrovert who's good at covering up your loneliness. And if you replenish yourself by being alone, that doesn't necessarily mean that you're lonely. But in terms of a problem habit that you're dealing with, you're going to want to know the difference for you, of being alone to support yourself and nourish yourself versus being alone and not reaching out if your problem habit is signaling that there's issues you need to address. The old school argument was how much we're influenced by nature, that's the prepersonal and the genetic, and how much by nurture, that's the postpersonal and the social. New school is the understanding, as Kelleman presents, that each of us is given an inheritance and is influenced by the social realm. From that, we can choose to form a personal existence that is ours. Whether you're an extrovert who hides your loneliness in a friendly, outgoing smile, or an introvert who needs quiet time but overextends that, knowing the signals of your own triggers is not as simple as social conventions. It's for you to recognize in yourself when getting too lonely could be problematic. Either way, the HALT frame is an effective reality check. By being attentive to your own sense of timing and rhythm, you can create your baseline of knowing when you're too hungry, angry, lonely, and tired. Knowing when you could be slipping back into behavior that doesn't serve your future. This gives you information that guides you in practicing different actions to bring yourself back on track. HALT is a self-caring reminder for stabilizing your changes of habit. And this is only one way of sustaining new behaviors and growing yourself into your best future. If you're wondering about this, come to visit habitsintohealth.com and you can request a small self-assessment questionnaire to begin your exploration. This is Michael Ann Conley, and you've been listening to Habits Into Health. I support you in turning your old habits around into healthy possibilities for your future. Thanks for joining me.